Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen. I'm stepping in for Steve Bertrand, who's in Ireland. You know, Steve's got a very, very good job. Let me just say that. Now, Steve claims he's listening. If you are, hey, Steve, I feel like you shouldn't be listening and you should be doing something much more fun. But, you know, we are going to deliver a super good show for you. So we've got a lot going on today. There's a lot in tech, and we have Adam Ochstein, who's going to be in later today, Maria Catrice from Built in Chicago. But right now we have Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation. Last night was the 1871 big event, and it is a pretty amazing thing to look around the room and see the Chicago tech community. I mean, 900 people more. The growth has been amazing.
Yeah, it's true. And it's definitely, the ecosystem is the word that's always used, but it is just a community that really likes to support each other. They know it's hard to build things, and they're very supportive of each other in doing it.
And rightly so, because we've had a lot of wins. And this week, everyone is talking about Viv. So I know enough to be dangerous, but I'm so glad that you're here to fill us in. So
yeah,
tell us, I've heard it. I think it's the next better version of Siri. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's from the makers of Siri, which is in our iPhones, if we have those. And this idea sort of is a step further, that it's this artificial intelligence meets personal assistant, but meets all your devices and almost becomes an open platform so that, you know, smart people can figure out ways that everything becomes responsive to us. So it takes that idea of, you know, one example I saw they gave early on was like, you're driving in your car and you need to send a present and you say, send dad my gift and signed it, blah, blah, blah. And you can do these things and it will do these multi-step processes for you.
So not just a straight question, what's the weather? What's the score? Can you find me this address?
Exactly. Kind of executes on a little bit higher level, I guess you could say.
And so it's also like an Alexa. I mean, I can stand in my kitchen and Alexa will order me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think people are becoming a little more familiar with that type of idea.
Yep.
And so what happened with that company this week is that Samsung purchased it. So obviously that gets it, you know, a toehold in all kinds of devices.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Samsung will have the oven, the refrigerator, that, you know, everything that's responsive to your voice commands.
Yes.
So, and that's what they've said from the beginning of trying to build this new, you know, artificial intelligence, that they feel like the whole point is for it to be everywhere. And certainly being bought by Samsung takes you a lot of the way there.
And yeah. There were a bunch of Chicago investors who were in on that deal who I think had a big win.
Definitely. Chicago investors are very happy. And it's one of those, yeah, we didn't get numbers, but we have smiling people.
Yes, exactly.
Telling us about it,
there was a lot of light and happy feet in the room last
night. Yes, a
nice
exit, as they say, for the investors. And, you know, it's a cool thing for Chicago. One of the founders is still in Barrington. So although the product has worked on a lot in Silicon Valley, he's in Barrington. And he's definitely someone who challenges the Chicago scene to really think as big as possible. And with a great win like this, it certainly encourages that.
And I think it challenges the coast to not just think about innovation and exits and big wins coming on the east or west. So
yeah.
I think it's great for what we can call the Silicon Heartland.
Yeah.
There's another, you brought it in, Ballot Ready, to talk about today, but I'm so glad you did because it is top of mind for me for sure. I've been following Ballot Ready. I'd love for you to tell us about it. And it does seem to me that if we can bring our cell phones and get more informed into the ballot booth, let's do it, and Ballot Ready will help. So tell us about Ballot Ready.
Yeah, so Ballot Ready is at the Polsky Center at the University of Chicago. It's a, you know, a small startup, but it's growing. And what they're trying to do is help us as voters be able to access information, you know, either ahead of time or in the voting booth, frankly, to help us decide who we're voting for. So it gathers information that can help you make those decisions better. And, you know, in a year like this, we think we're all thinking about politics all the time, but who are we thinking about? The top two candidates and
nobody else. Isn't that amazing? You go into the voting booth and all of a sudden it's like the floodgates open and you realize we are in such a bubble right now. And always are, I think, as, you know, people who watch the news, there are many, many other people on that ballot and we know very little about them.
Yeah, you get in there, you know, the top of the ticket, who you want, and then you're kind of flummoxed by the rest. And even honestly, people that work at newspapers or radio stations, or, you know, you try to keep up with it, you may be reasonably informed. But I think even when we walk in, you see long lists of judges, you see, you know, things that it's just hard to keep up on.
And it's an app, is that right?
Mm-hmm. And this, it will allow you to kind of go in and look at, you know, who are the candidates. You can, you know, obviously for where you're voting, your location, and it connects you to all kinds of information on, you know, positions they've taken, coverage of them in various ways, so you can kind of figure out who these people are and make hopefully a more informed choice.
Do you know where they're gathering the information on the candidates from? Because it seems to me that the real essence of Ballot Ready's success will be its ability to be perceived as not having an agenda. Do we know how they do that?
Yeah, so they're using crowdsourcing, and they're also using IBM Watson, which we're back to artificial intelligence now, so we might want to start thinking about how that's invading
or everything. Investing in it.
Yeah, so they're looking at ways like that are kind of gathering the data, and that also makes it more cost effective for them.
So it's an app that we can download, and there's no harm in bringing your phone into the voting booth,
right? Yeah, you can do that. I have honestly done that. I've used sort of just newspaper, endorsement pages.
Yes.
And just in case I won't have Wi-Fi access, I'll take a screenshot of every page.
Yes.
So I can pull up the photo, and because I need it, honestly, for the judges and some of those yes or no things that are at the very bottom of the ballot, I like to know. You can definitely take your phone in, or if you're nervous again about access, you can figure out ways to do that. But I do think it helps.
Yeah, me too. And then there's Tuck, which is another big Chicago-grown, Chicago reservation type innovation.
Yeah,
I've used it before, and as I said to you before we started, I still can't really tell you why it's so awesome, but I know it is.
Yeah, so Tuck is interesting because it was more created with the restaurant in mind.
Correct.
But then of course the consumer also uses it. So Tuck is from the creators of Alinea. Some people may be familiar with that type of concept where they took restaurant reservations but created it. It's almost more like a sports ticketing type situation. You pick the time, the place, you buy a ticket, you pay everything ahead of time. Then you get there and you're not fumbling over the bill and things like that.
So no matter what you order, it's paid for in advance?
I think it depends on, different situations, but it's certainly at places with set menus.
Right.
You would do that. The idea is to actually help restaurants. What initially inspired it was this idea that people are constantly canceling reservations.
Yes, right.
It costs restaurants a lot of money. So that was kind of the problem it was built to solve originally. But of course, they're now hoping that it will become massive for restaurants, and also that it might be, an example they give is your dentist. Somebody else who doesn't want you to cancel your appointment.
Yes.
And, just ways to manage that. And another important factor is it brings in dynamic pricing is the term they use, which means if you want to go to a fancy restaurant, you will pay less at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday than you will at 8 p.m. on a Saturday.
And so it does put more power in the hands of the consumer as well as the restaurant.
It does.
In theory,
because it
right?
gives you choice as well. It lets the restaurant control it in their way, but then it gives you a choice. Maybe you'd prefer to go at 5 p.m. Tuesday
right.
and save $100 or whatever. So it just makes it more complex.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. There's
sure
always Chicago tech innovation, and wins to talk about.
Yep, so, there's always things to talk about.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen. I am in for Steve Bertrand today. And we have one of my favorite guests and people in the studio today. And I'm not just saying that because I know he tweeted at Steve saying he's a little sad Steve's not here today. So I'm not really trying to suck up to you, Adam. I actually like you. Glad to see you here. So Adam Ockstein from Stratix, who comes in and talks about all sorts of interesting issues related to the workplace. And today, you brought in the topic that I think no one likes to think about.
Going to the dentist?
Close, right? Wouldn't you say this is a close second?
Absolutely.
Okay, the annual review.
Yeah, what's that?
What is that? Why do we do that? So what's the problem with it and what's the solution?
Well, the problem is we're not elephants. We don't have a great memory. So whatever happened last week is current. So I could have been a good corporate citizen 51 weeks out of the year, and last year I was late a couple times. And I get a bad annual review, and no one likes to deal with conflict. No one likes to deal with the process of prepping for it.
Right.
And then the employee feels like we're both going to be on a stage. And in reality, a good manager is interacting with their employee on a regular basis. So the review happens every time they interact with one another.
Right.
Why make it all formulaic?
So do you think this is going away?
Well, the trends, if you're looking, like I think Harvard Business Review just had an article about it recently, and you're seeing all the trends where it's more moving towards an iterative, ongoing, where social media, Facebook happy culture, where we're going to just go ahead and have communication, constant communication with updating goals and iterate. I think it's moving towards that. As long as you have a way of documenting the
That's
good,
what
the
I was
going to
say. Isn't this part of the issue is that if you do have an employee who's underperforming and you're even thinking about letting that employee go, you actually have to document it.
Well, yeah. So the whole notion of, okay, I have an employee who's underperforming and you've been terrible for the last 6 months, Suzanne, but I'm going to
never
wait,
me,
but I'm going to wait,
just using
but
my
I'm going
to,
it's June. So I'm going to wait till December to tell you that
right.
you're bad at your job
right.
is insane.
So can we just briefly role play? Because I think people don't really understand how to give feedback. And I think part of what you're saying is in order to get away from the annual review, we've got to get a whole lot better at giving the in real time feedback. Yes. All right. So I've just turned in a bunch of work late and the clients are pissed. You're my manager. You stop by my desk. How does that go?
Well, the whole we used to be coached as managers. So we're going to sandwich it, right? So this is what you do really well, Suzanne.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to the sandwich doesn't work because the employees are, human nature is, okay,
I'm waiting for the butt.
Yeah. So just pull the Band-Aid off, right?
Okay.
So Suzanne?
Yes?
Come on, what's going on? This was late. I just ate a poop sandwich from the client, right?
Really? What's the problem?
It was late. And, you know, we have deadlines and expectations, and that's unacceptable. If you knew you were going to be late on it.
Well, I was hoping to get it in on time.
Okay, then communicate with me a couple days ahead of time that maybe it might be late so I can manage the client's expectations that we're going to be late. Now I have to eat that sandwich, which you made.
Okay. Everyone should have a boss like Adam. That was good because I think I would have gotten a chuckle, but I would have gotten the message. The other thing you did, which was great, was you didn't just tell me what was wrong, but what you expect in terms of me fixing it, right?
Exactly. And then I think the other thing is you have to make it about the impact to not only my relationship with you, but how what you did impacted the organization as well as, you know, our business and the client and the perception, all those other things.
That's awesome. And so I know the other thing that comes up often is this conversation that can be awkward about raises.
Right.
And it's a crazy thing because I think people wait for that moment in which they're going to get a raise or move up the ladder. But that's not necessarily always such a straightforward path. So
how
does that process work when it goes well?
Well, Mr. Scrooge, a.k.a. the boss or the man or the company, the guy in the corner office.
The woman.
Doesn't want to ever get, well, I'm stereotyping.
I get it. Okay. I'm with you.
So doesn't ever want to give a raise. So we're going to hold on to all of our rich Republican dollars as long as we can. We're not going to want to share them with the masses, right? So that whole notion of, you know, when is the right time to bring up a raise and how to, you know, the annual review is not that time.
Right.
Ever. I think that if the company's doing well, part of that ongoing conversation with your manager is around expectation of pay. I think that a good leadership is constantly looking at salary surveys on benchmarking what the competition's up to. There is an absolute war for talent in every industry.
Yes.
To get good people. And if you're not paying your people well, I always look at what's the replacement cost. So if Suzanne leaves tomorrow, is it really about the couple $1,000 raise? Because if I have to go find her replacement, I'm going to probably spend more money, number one.
Yes.
And number two, there's that training cost. And number three, are they going to be as good as Suzanne, even though she turns in work late?
Well, they are never going to be as good as Suzanne. But in an ideal world, how often, if now I'm an employee, how often should I expect to get a raise? So you say it's not part of the annual review, but should that happen still once a year, twice a year? What's realistic?
I think that at least every 18 months to 2 years. I mean, ideally, if the company's doing well, it should be part of the process that I'm reviewing from a budget perspective, whether it's my fiscal years and, you know, calendar year. So I'm doing that type of review with my management team in January to this year, whether it be, you know, the best type of raise is the proactive one where your boss pulls you in the office and says, you know, we got to talk.
Absolutely.
And then you like make it all serious. You're like, you're getting a raise.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's right. Great. And what is your take on the other perks that are non-raise related? How important do you think those are within the culture of a company? So, you know, hey, I'd like to give you, you know, an extra day off. I don't know if that ever really happens. But are those non-raise perks important also?
Yeah, I think it shows in every survey, and it is true. I mean, once you equalize the pay, then this other stuff manages, right?
So
if I'm paying you 30% less than fair market value, but I'm giving you all these other perks, I don't, you know, it's not gonna make a difference. But once you level the playing field on the salary, things like culture and, you know, and feedback and communication style and good, bad, and ugly,
yeah,
you know, that type of annual review stuff that doesn't happen annually is the stuff that makes people want to stay.
Adam Ockstein, Stratix. Where can people find Stratix?
Stratix.com.
That's so easy.
It is.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We are going to take a quick break and we will be back. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Mushin. I'm in for Steve Bertrand, who is traveling in Ireland and hopefully having a great time. And we are going to talk now to Jordan Kane, who is an Indiana University music student who created a film about study abroad. I'm sure for many of us who spent time in college traveling with backpacks, this will bring back some great memories. So we're going to hear about his film right now and the fact that he is actually a grand prize winner in this nationwide film festival competition. Jordan.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you went abroad, and how long ago was that?
That was about 10 months ago. I left in January.
And you, in what year in school were you when you did that?
I was a junior.
So this is the typical junior year abroad, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you went on IES, which so did I. So that, you know, lets you know, because I think I'm a bit older than you since I have kids who are your age. IES has been around a long time.
Yes, it's a great organization.
So you went abroad, and how did you, it says here that you went to Austria, Spain, Italy, Hungary. How did you do all that and actually study?
Well, the organization does a great job of creating a balance for you to do as much as you can. So the academic portion is very important. They stress their grades very highly, and they hold us to a high standard. But they also want us to experience as much as we can. So just having that balance was the best way to travel as much as I did, as well as maintain a high GPA.
And where were you based? Where was the main part of the IES program?
I was in IES Vienna.
Wow. Right. Sometimes I think that, you know, this is a not to miss experience if your campus, your college possibly offers it, because you can't really ever replicate what it's like, right? Just to study abroad at this age and just get up on the weekends and figure out where you want to go.
Yeah, there is no way to like really plan out studying abroad. You just have to go. And
right.
Then once you do that, then the rest of it kind of takes care of itself.
So you made this film, which I understand is now, congratulations, the grand prize winner in the film festival. So it says it's a lighthearted take. So tell us about some of the funny moments that you captured in the film.
Well, all the funny moments are probably me dancing. And
yep.
It's composed of dancing, walking around, Europe, and me having fun with my friends, like I'm playing frisbee on the beach or I'm grabbing some gelato in Italy. And I just think it's a great representation of everything that I got to do and experience all in one. So, and it's nice and short too, so I wanted to keep it watchable.
Sure. And I think that a lot of people who have college age students or who know that they're adult children want to travel abroad are concerned because there's so much, you know, word, you know, you see the terrorism that takes place and a lot of it happening in Europe. While you were traveling, did you feel safe?
Yes, I felt very safe. The IES Vienna program has a great staff. They do, and I'm sure all the other IES programs have the same experience. The staff is very helpful and informative. And they make sure that we know what we're talking about and we know how to travel. And we're just very prepared. And I felt very safe.
And when you were there, did you go with just students from Indiana or through IES were you put together with students from other schools as well?
Oh, it was from all over the U.S. I was with students from California, Pennsylvania, New York, Indiana, Chicago. Yeah, so it was a whole bunch of schools all in one place.
And what was the most memorable, if you have to take whether it was in the film or not, what was one of the more memorable parts of your abroad experience?
That would probably be seeing my favorite opera live by my favorite conductor. I didn't even know that was going to happen.
Wow.
So Turandot was conducted by Gustavo Dudamel, which is sort of my idol. And I didn't know that this was happening until I was already there. And once I found out that that was going to be an experience, I made sure to get my ticket immediately. And that was probably the highlight of the entire trip, was getting to see that live and experiencing that, like something that I've listened to for years.
Oh, sure.
And only through my headphones to see it live and by my favorite conductor. That was quite the experience.
That's amazing. And when you traveled, did you stay? How much does Airbnb play in? I mean, back when I was traveling, it was always, the youth hostels. But where do you stay and what is cost effective today?
I stayed in both Airbnbs and hostels. It just really depends on the location. There's some that were, like I stayed in an Airbnb in Venice that was very beautiful, right on the water. And actually that was the cheapest option and it was fantastic. But then on the other side, there was in Rome, I stayed in a hostel and it was equally as great and cost effective as well. So it really just depends on the location. But both are very good options. I felt very safe at both locations. So I would say just try to find the nicest, cheapest option.
That's fantastic. And do you feel like being part of the IAS program now is going to sort of spark a travel bug in you and you'll try to travel as much as you can throughout your life?
Yes. I've been asked to make more videos when I start traveling more. So the first step is to find out when and how I'm going to travel. And then just produce what I can because this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed sharing. And if people would like to see more, then I'd be happy to.
So tell us where. So if we want to, I certainly want to watch the video and didn't have a chance to do it. So where do we find the video, Jordan?
You can find the video on YouTube. You can go to the IES Abroad YouTube channel and it should be there. My YouTube channel, you just search my name, Jordan Kane, and it should pop up there. You could also go on the IES Abroad Facebook page, and it can be accessed there. There's also a Facebook Live interview that I did yesterday.
Oh, nice.
That if people want to hear more about it, it was about a half an hour worth of talking. I answered some questions that people commented in. It was great. So if you want to see more of the behind the scenes
awesome
of it, you could go to that Facebook page and watch it live there.
Great. Jordan Kane, grand prize winner from nationwide study abroad film festival competition through Chicago-based IES Study Abroad program. Thank you so much for being with us. And we will share and post the link to your video in various places. So thanks so much for being with us.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we are going to be talking. That's like the royal we. I am going to be talking to both my good friend and colleague, Maria Catrice of Built in Chicago. So we're going to take a quick break and be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. Michael, I kind of miss my theme song. I feel like when I'm on with Steve, I get like my own Suzanne theme song and here it's just general music, but I'm going to try to not take that personally. So in the studio, a good friend, my colleague, Maria Christopoulos Catrice, a catrice. Right?
Yes, Catrice.
I just said that I wouldn't pronounce it the way I did before.
I won't hold you to it.
Thank
They're very
you so
tough
much.
Greek names.
It's a double header,
it
too.
It is a double header.
Wow. Okay. So you're the CEO of Built in Chicago. First, I know what we're going to get to, which I think is an incredible list, is you're going to be releasing the Chicago Top 100 Employers list.
Yep.
But first, tell us about Built in.
Yeah, absolutely. So Built In is the largest network of online communities for tech companies and startups. And we've quickly become the number one recruitment platform for these tech companies and startups, which is really awesome. We're headquartered in Chicago, building our team locally here with other team members in six major tech markets. So we operate sites in six other local communities as well.
And what's the most recent add-on to the family?
So Boston launched in October, and that completes. So we're in Austin, Colorado, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, and now Boston.
And how does a city become a Built-in Chicago? Are you going out and trying to get them to set up shop, or are they coming to you?
No, actually, it's really strategic. We're entering into the largest tech markets in the U.S. So everyone outside of San Francisco to date, and that's by strategy and design.
Yeah.
That'll come hopefully by 2018. But right now, we were entering the largest tech markets in the U.S. that really needed our service and our product.
Fantastic. And so you've done this list before, the
yep.
top 100 employers. How does this work? What's the criteria?
Absolutely. So we survey all of our customers and tech companies in the local communities we're in, and we ask them to submit their employee count. And we're lucky we have such great relationships that they're always willing to do it. And when we release these reports, we try to also give some analysis and context behind them. So we try to understand, you know, the age of the company. We try to see how the market's accelerating. And so we try to pull some great analysis. We do them once a year. And they're not only great for the communities that we're in, but they're also remarkable for these companies to help position them as great employers in the city they live and work in, and to help them recruit top talent.
And is it about quality and quantity both, or just purely who's recruiting, who has the greatest number of employees?
Right now, we just have the criteria of quantity because it's the easiest one to really pull an apples to apples comparison. And then we do some comparison year over year to see who's jumped the most in rankings, right? Which is really exciting to see. We also do some analysis around how old the companies are, which is really telling. And now that we're in six major tech markets, it's really interesting to see the differences across the markets and start to pull away, you know, what are Chicago strengths versus some of these other markets.
And are there any surprises for you this year, or any trends that you're seeing that are interesting to you?
So I think what's interesting to me, I think for the first time, we have about 10% of the list are companies less than 5 years old, I believe.
Wow.
Which is pretty insane, which actually shows how much quicker tech companies in Chicago are accelerating. Typically, we had a significant amount of companies 10 years old plus, because Chicago companies tended to grow slower. A lot of them were bootstrapped versus venture-backed. The tides are changing, and companies are getting funded earlier. And so I think that's definitely direct lead-in to what we're seeing this year on the list.
That's kind of an amazing statistic, that within 5 years that they are creating that kind of employee base. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this year, the one that pops to mind is Uptake. They went from 300 to 600.
And that's Brad Keywell. Not that that is anything less, but Brad has a great reputation, right, because of Groupon. And so he may also have the personality and the reputation to bring people in.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a testament to the city as well. We have a number of these serial entrepreneurs, right? You know, you're always going to do it better the second, and then you're going to do it even best the third time and the fourth time. And so I think Brad Keywell and Eric Lefkofsky are two great examples, and there's a handful of others who are onto their third, fourth, fifth businesses here in Chicago. And I think there's a testament to that. You just know how to scale faster.
Any others on the list that you are excited about?
Oh, I'm excited about a lot. You know, there's a couple of companies that had recent exits, both Fieldglass 2 years ago, as well as CleverSafe had over $1 billion exits. Huge technology companies here. What's interesting about them and will be interesting to watch in the future is the tech companies that spin off from their employees. I know the CTO of Fieldglass is already off to his new tech company that, of course, it's really remarkable to see sort of the spawning entrepreneurial ecosystem that comes out of some of these huge exits. I think it was reported that CleverSafe generated about 80 millionaires as a result of their exit. Wow. So it's a really significant impact on Chicago, you know, 5-10 years from now.
And what's also nice, you and I were both at the 1871 dinner last night, mm-hmm. that these entrepreneurs who've had these great exits are actually now becoming really well known and celebrated for giving back, whether that means philanthropically, whether that means mentoring, whether that means volunteering their time to help other startups. I mean, it's a kind of amazing ethos that we have. So you talk about CleverSafe or Fieldglass, those guys are really known as not just having had a big win financially, but being great citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, firsthand, I've witnessed it and sort of derived benefit from it. You know, both Jay Shekawat of Fieldglass, as well as Joe Mansueto of Morningstar, who is probably one of the most underrated entrepreneurs in this city, are personal mentors and investors of ours. And they both are, you know, willing to meet with me on a quarterly basis. And, you know, as an entrepreneur who's building a, you know, fast growing company for the first time, there's nothing more valuable than that. And so the fact that they're both willing to write checks and they're willing to invest their time is a testament to what this community is all about. And Jay last night at that dinner, I'll never forget what he said. And he said, some people pick the weather when they decide where to build a business. You know, we pick Chicago for the community. And I don't think there's a truer statement.
Yeah. And you feel it. You know, you really do feel that. And so what's next for Built-In? Anything exciting on the horizon for you? Mm-hmm. Always, I know there is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are closing another round of funding right now, and we're going to be launching our next market early next year. The team will quickly be at around 50 employees, and just a lot. We're the number one recruitment platform for tech companies and startups. And I think you'll see a lot more conversation around that. I think Built-In has now climbed the ranks and is, you know, being put into the same sentence as the LinkedIns of the world and
Absolutely.
The Stack Overflows of the world. And so we're really lucky that we've grown as quickly as we have, and we have a great team. And so now it's about building out the team more and helping these tech companies grow as fast as they're growing.
Well, fantastic. And you won't say it for yourself, so I'll say it for you. I know a lot of that growth has had to do with you and your leadership. So thank you for all that. So you can't say anything because you're too humble. So you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We're going to take a quick break and come right back and close out the show.